Welcome, lucky listeners. Grab yourselves a hot cup of... Tuck yourself down deep into the covers and make sure the lights are on. It's time for Read Me a Nightmare.
Welcome to episode 6 of Read Me a Nightmare. I'm Angelique Fons, your host, and you might be a redneck if you enjoyed this episode. The Golden Falcon tells the tale of two unlikely lovebirds, Earl and Tempt and Tammy. They're going to buy themselves a very quirky mobile home. This story was first published in Jolly Horror's anthology Coffin Blossoms and reprinted in my own anthology, The Publishers Behind the Pages. Now, you won't believe the voice talent I wrangled for this episode. I've been working with Christy Stewart for over 20 years creating television commercials. Christy has worked in communications and the media industry most of her professional career. With a love of theater and performing, she first stepped on stage at the tender age of 14 in the role of Little Mary in the longest-running melodrama production, The Drunkard, in her hometown of Tulsa, Oklahoma. Being from Tulsa, Oklahoma might have helped her nail the accents in my story. And if that isn't amazing enough for episode 6, I also have an interview with Jonathan Lambert, the publisher and creator of Jolly Horror Press. He originally bought and printed The Golden Falcon in his anthology Coffin Blossoms. A writer himself, Jonathan created Jolly Horror Press when he noticed there was very few places for comedy horror. Now, I consider him one of the very best editors in the business, and he's helped a few writers launch their careers, including myself. He has an open call right now for his next anthology, Executive Dread, and he's seeking stories of workplace horror. Make sure you hang around after the reading of The Golden Falcon to hear why Jonathan Lambert accepts some stories and not others, and explore how comedy can work with horror. Now braid that mullet into a sweet rat tail, grab a cold Colt 45, and let's launch into The Golden Falcon.
The Golden Falcon by Angelique Fons. There is nothing more satisfying than taking a shower in someone else's bathroom, especially when the owners don't know you're enjoying the body spa shower system. Natural stone flooring and unlimited hot water. Two hipsters, Suzette and Fergus, owned this McMansion on the good side of Mud Lake and worked in the city. I walked their labradoodle, the Django, for them every weekday. I lived with my ma and her Winnebago on the other side of the lake. Her plumbing was rusty and the water hardly worked in the tiny lav. I'd left Django in the backyard with a piece of deer antler, so he wouldn't whine and bug me. Stepping out of the enormous glass stall, I wrapped myself in the little beach towel I brought and would take with me. No evidence. I'd left my leopard print onesie in the master bedroom and was toweling off my hair, walking down the hall, when I saw a tall man with a rat-tail mullet leaning over the dresser and sorting through Suzette's jewelry. I screamed and tried to cover myself with the little towel. He whirled and pointed a BB gun at me.
"Whoa, put that away, Earl? Is that you? What you doing here? When'd you get out?"
I said. He grinned as his eyes skirted my naked body, like a starving man. For being on the other side of 30, I still looked pretty good. Bit of a pot belly, but my C-cups were still holding up.
"Woo-wee! A new Tammy. What you doing in here, girl?"
"Moved to the rich side of the lake. And, yeah, I got probation." Prison had done Earl some good. I don't remember him being such a hunk 2 years ago. Thick bicep muscles flexed under his Soundgarden t-shirt. He'd grown a thick mullet and added mutton chops over his acne-scarred cheeks. My knees were feeling a little weak.
"Put away for robbery, and you're out and at it again? You can't roll these folks. They're my clients."
Earl put down his BB gun, sauntering over to pull my towel away. I could feel my breath speeding up in a funny way.
"Clients? What kind of work you doing naked in this big old house?"
I pulled his wife beater tank over his head. Fair is fair.
"I walk dogs, speaking of... How'd you get in? The Django didn't yell bloody hail."
Earl leaned down and gave me a kiss, his mutton chops tickling my lips.
He drew back and stroked my blonde perm. Came in the front door, didn't even know about no doggy. Dog walking pay well? I make 40, even 50 bucks most days, I said, tugging down his camo pants. Ah, sugar mama. You my dream come true, tempting Tammy. We tumbled onto the king bed, and it was even more satisfying than stealing a shower. And I knew I was going to spend the rest of my life with Earl by the end of those amazing 10 minutes. Getting dressed, I told him how it was going to be. Earl, you got to put back the jewelry and make it look like we weren't never here. You can't be damaging my business. At first, he looked a little disappointed, but then gave me a little salute and sexy smile. I helped him put back everything and straightened up the place. I still had a couple more dogs to walk, so Earl and I made plans to get together in the evening. That night, I put on my best tube top, feather earrings, and Daisy Duke shorts, where the pockets stick out on my upper thighs. We drove his scooter down to Mud Lake and spent the night under the stars. It was magical. I had beard rash on my face that would last for days. We cuddled up on a picnic bench. Tammy, you're my woman now, he said, puffing on a cigarilla. I got a warm, gooey feeling inside. I finally hooked myself a soulmate. I don't think Ma is going to let me move you into the Winnebago. It's not even a double wide. And I'm bunking in with one of my roofer buds. It's not good for a class woman like you. We need to get our own place. The next morning, I did the walk of pride back to my mom's trailer and changed into a spandex dog walking outfit. My body wanted to climb into my queen pullout. But Earl didn't have a job yet, and I had to keep earning the dough. I rushed through my walks that morning, not even bothering to steal a shower anywhere. Luckily, I had a few dollars saved up in an egg carton under my bed. Almost a G-note. Earl was meeting me at the trailer dealer on the highway. A few guys owe me, so I'll collect and then we'll do some shopping, he promised. My ma had a fair chunk of land, like an acre or two, and there was a patch down by the lake that would fit another trailer perfect, and far enough away that if it got rockin', my ma wouldn't hear the talkin'. Around 3 p.m., I put on my fanciest mini dress, red, with rib cutouts, swiped on my pit stick, and shook some baby powder in my hair to degrease it. I borrowed Mom's old pickup truck with the bumper hitch. She was gone for the day, probably bingo, and drove to Hicks, Hitches, and Holmes to take a look. Earl was already there. Devastating smile on his face. Man, he cleaned up good. Here comes Tempting Tammy. His scooter parked to the side and his fine dark mullet and a braid down his back. He had on gray sweatpants and a nice denim cut-off vest. With his shades on, you wouldn't even know he was wall-eyed. My heart fluttered. Let's find ourselves a castle, Prince Charming. We walked down the strip of dead grass between the rows of trailers. There were pop-ups, tear-ups, fifth wheels, but they all had one thing in common. All way too much moolah. Like over $10,000 for a tiny one. Earl brought a lot of cash, and between the both of us, we had $1,700. I started to cry again, which wasn't good news for my blue mascara. Hey, I think I see a used bunch over there, Earl said. I squinted through the makeup, burning my eyes, and saw a hand-painted sign, pre-loved. We went to take a look at the three trailers sitting in the back. One was on blocks. One looked like it had lost a fight with a semi. The third looked good, with road-worthy tires. Dirty, a bit lopsided, but not bad. Earl walked over to the hulking trailer. We found ourselves a gem here. He was right. Golden Falcon, written on the front in fancy lettering. Shoebox-sized windows everywhere and only a few broken bits. We walked around the side. There were two doors, a single solid one at the back and huge sliding ones with a duct-taped screen at the front. Look at the bump outs. There's already a kitchen table in here, I said, pushing open the front screen. Earl knocked me aside in his excitement to take a look. I rubbed my ear where his elbow had accidentally whacked me, following him into the trailer. He was eager. I like that. The smell of dust, mold, and long dead mouse hung in the air. Faded linoleum and stained carpet covered the floor. Fake wood paneling made the inside shadowy and dark. I wonder what sort of stories this lady has to tell. Almost hear the porn and smell the weed, I said. The way Earl ran his hand over the melamine counter in the mini kitchen, he was sold. The best part? There was a full-sized bathroom in the back with a fine-looking shower. Yep, babe, we found our new home. The Golden Falcon is gonna fly again, he said. With that, we hopped out and went to find the owner of the yard. He'd seen us drive in and limped his way over from the office trailer at the front. A big belly, 8 or 9 strands of hair greasily plastered to his head, and jaundiced skin.
Hi, I'm Hick. I see you checking out our finest used lodgings. So you folks want to take this butte home? Good deal, just for today.
He stuck out a hand with dirty fingernails, and I let Earl do the negotiating.
Hick, what's your best price? We'll take this baby off your hands right now. The only thing I got to warn you about is the bedroom back door is jammed. But the rest of her works perfect,
Hick said. $1,000 and a few enthusiastic handshakes later, we were the proud new owners of the Golden Falcon. That left us $700 whole dollars to fix her up. We hooked her up to the back of my mom's pickup and hauled back. Thank goodness there were no cops out because the load was definitely illegal. The trailer rocked and shuddered as we slowly navigated the side roads. Luck was on our side and we managed to unhitch our new home in the dirt by the river. My ma stood in the driveway, bellowing.
Tammy, what in tarnation? You can't park that ugly thing on my lot. Don't think you're hooking up to my hydro.
Earl slouched down and pretended he didn't hear. He was a smart man. She stomped down to the lake edge. My ma let me do what I want most of the time. I'm her mini-me with the same long blonde hair, permed just right. Earl quickly unhitched the Golden Falcon.
Better keep it clean outside, she said, climbing into her truck.
Well, those first days were plain bliss. We dragged my sofa bed down the hill, and Earl and I got down to serious work of cleaning up our new home. Listening to our favorite hard rock bands, we ripped out the stinky carpet and bought a lime green shag from the thrift store. Earl managed to find a generator secondhand somewhere, so the beer fridge was humming. Plus, the shower worked perfect once we put an old pump into the lake. My ma gave us a TV and VCR as a housewarming gift. After I found some vintage XXX movies on tape at the local thrift store, we were partying like it was 1970. Things didn't start going wrong until a week after we moved the Golden Falcon in. That day started as usual. I got up, hung from cheap box wine, and staggered to the other side of the lake to walk my dogs. Thank goodness the owners are normally at work. Django, the Labradoodle, and his designer breed friends never judge me for red-rimmed eyes. I survived the morning and went back home, looking forward to tumbling into Earl's arms. He hadn't found work yet, and perhaps having a beer to shake the cobwebs. I stopped outside the duct tape door, terrible music blaring. I'm not a classical music fan, but I could hear piano, string instruments, and horns. The Golden Falcon was pulsing with it. We listened to Slayer, not Chop Chop or Beethoven or whatever. Storming in, I got my second shock. Earl, what have you done to your hair?
Instead of drooling in bed with one hairy leg out of the sheets, my lover was sitting at the kitchen table writing on a pad of paper. His mullet was gone. All that lovely hair. He raised one hand to it and stroked the neat business-like cut. I decided it was time for a new look. I don't want to stay a degeneracy forever, my darling. Darling? New look? Earl called me. Tempton, Tammy, not darling. What is this? We wake up to Metallica or Nirvana. He kept writing on the pad of paper in front of him. I noticed he shaved. The mutton chops were gone. He wasn't half the sexy guy anymore. I find it inspirational. I had an idea for a story. Something re-envisioning the world with minimal light pollution and sustainable agricultural practices.
Sustainable what?
Who was this guy? I'm going to go visit my mom, okay? Let you do your writing thing in peace. He hardly acknowledged me, bending back over his notepad, grooving to his old folk music. I grabbed two beers out of our fridge and walked 200 meters to my mom's trailer. Stopping to look back at the Golden Falcon, I squinted my eyes. Did she look shinier? There was no way Earl had time to cut his own hair, shave, and scrub the exterior of the trailer. Instead of sitting down for a breakfast beer, I hopped into my mom's pickup truck and drove back to Hicks Hitches. The proprietor was out inspecting his mobile homes. Walking over to him, I noticed with disdain he was wearing a stained wife-beater tank top with a pair of dual-purpose swim trunks.
Mr. Hick, may I have some discourse with you on the history and past ownership of our fine Golden Falcon?
Come again?
He squinted at me. Come again was right. What verbiage was coming out of my mouth? I always hated people who spoke with highfalutin language, thinking they were better than everyone else. First my beloved Earl and now me! I concentrated and tried again.
Who used to own that there trailer we bought from y'all a couple weeks ago?
Oh, some rich kids from a farm the next county brought her in. It'd be rotten in the field. They'd had a great-grandfather used to write poetry in it.
And what happened to this author?
I asked. Hick looked at me a moment, trying to access some dark compartment of his memory.
If I remember rightly, they said the old geezer died in the trailer. He took to spending more and more time in there with his music and his typewriter and didn't come out for days. It was the smell that finally made them check on him.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hick. Your time and consideration is much appreciated,
I said, giving his gnarly hand a shake. Now, I generally don't indulge in superstition or believe in ghosts, but I had to do some thinking. I liked Earl the way he was before we started living in that trailer. No business haircuts and dumb ideas about writing stories about pollution or whatever.
We were real down-to-earth folks. Not the pretentious sort that lived on the other side of Mud Lake.
I drove back to the Golden Falcon and noticed the screen was fixed. No duct tape. I could hear some Mozart playing from the boombox.
How did I know that name? Mozart.
My man was standing in the kitchen with a big garbage bag. I saw him tossing out my Cheezos, mac and cheese, frozen pizzas, and cola.
What are you doing?
I asked in horror. He didn't even turn and look at me. His preppy haircut made him almost unrecognizable.
This is all garbage food. We're going to start eating organic and healthy. Farmers markets, fresh produce, no more of this.
My jaw dropped open. This had to stop. The writing and haircut were bad enough, but an entire lifestyle change?
I'm going out, Earl. My Cheezos better be back in that cupboard when I get home.
This time I drove into town to the hardware store. turning up the radio loud. I tried to drown out crazy thoughts of going back to school and continuing my education, perhaps as a vet tech, or even a fully licensed vet.
What a terrible idea. I hadn't even finished high school. There was no way I'd even get in.
Making sure I'd kept deranged thoughts at bay, I finished procuring what I needed from the hardware store. Then I drank a few beers and indulged in some fries at the pub until closing time. Driving back to the Golden Falcon, I turned the truck lights out, the radio off, and drove up quietly. I needed to get my man back, the hot one with the mullet. I quietly opened the screen door and splashed gas over the green shag carpet. Then I lit it with a barbecue starter. The whoosh sound and the flames roared up immediately. I stood back, the heat singeing my face. Like a bonfire, I could envision Earl and I warming ourselves, maybe roasting some marshmallows. Oh my God, Earl! What was I doing? I wanted to get rid of this cursed trailer, not him. It was the Falcon's fault. Everything was changing between us. I ran down to the bedroom door at the other end of the trailer and pounded. Come on out, Earl! Fire! Nothing. I couldn't hear him inside. The fire was growing rapidly. The curtains and shag carpet went up like diesel fuel. Earl, you gotta get out! I wrenched on the door, but it didn't open. In a panic, I pulled and yanked harder. Fire! Get out of there! The metal of the door was burning my fingers. I had to let go. The door hadn't moved an inch. I could hear Earl now, and he was screaming. Even though my skin was turning red from the heat, a cold wave of memory washed over me. Didn't Hick say something about the door needing to be fixed? The second one was jammed? My God, I just found the man of my dreams. I couldn't lose him now. I rushed over to the sliding glass doors, but its handles were glowing red. No touching them. The trailer was really flaming now. Sitting on a lawn chair beside me, I noticed one of my super long dog leashes. Grabbing it, I ran back to the truck and hooked one end to the hitch, then hopped in the truck and backed it up as close as I dared to the back of the trailer, looping the handle over the doorknob until it was tight. I ran back into the truck and gunned it. The truck jerked when it ran out of dog leash, and I felt the tires dig in. It only took a second or two before the whole bedroom door flew off the trailer body. Slamming on the brakes, I threw it in park and ran back. Earl staggered out of the trailer, coughing up a lung full of all the smoke he'd inhaled and red welts coming up on parts of his arms. I almost knocked him over, running into him with a huge hug. Oh my God, Earl! You were almost barbecued! I love you so much. He leaned over me and gave me a huge squeeze back. The smell of ash and fuel stung in my nose. My tempting Tammy, you saved my life, woman. We stood back a few meters from the blazing trailer, now not much more than a burned out shell, and watched the flames slowly die down. We didn't have much in the Golden Falcon to burn. A few of the other residents of the park wandered over, some with beers, others in their PJs. My ma came up to stand beside me.
Is there even a point of calling the fire department now? Looks like that she's gonna be nothing more than cinders in a shell before they'd even get it.
She said, pointing her cigarette at Earl and I.
You two are gonna have to pay to get what's left of that eyesore towed out of here.
Earl hugged me tighter. He was okay. Done coughing and the red arm spots just needing some aloe.
Yes, ma'am. Tammy and me, we'll clean up this mess. We ain't got no insurance, so I guess we back to where we done began, he said. I must have fallen asleep smoking or something.
His words were like music to my ears. I wasn't sure if he knew the fire was my fault and he was taking the blame, or if he genuinely didn't know. No matter. I was his tempting Tammy again. And my Earl would grow his mullet back if I asked nice. I reached up and gave his scarred, smoky cheek a kiss.
Guess you're both spending the night with me, then. Y'all have to look for a rental in the morning. I think my cousin might have a basement apartment in town. He'd put you up for a good price,
my ma said, turning and walking back up to her place. I grabbed Earl's hand and smiled at him. We both needed to clean up, and I guess we were gonna have to make do with my mom's tiny bathroom. But Earl and I had our whole future ahead of us. Who knew? Maybe this basement apartment would have a nice big shower with room for two.
I hope you enjoyed Kristy Stewart's reading of The Golden Falcon. She nailed Temptin' Tammy's character perfectly. If you want to learn more about Kristy or Jolly Horror's upcoming call for workplace horror stories, you can find more information in the show notes at www.fonz.ca/works/podcast. Now let's launch into my chat with Jonathan Lambert. So I wanted to talk to you today about Jolly Horror and just the whole concept behind your past and how it got started. And
well, I mean, it's 2017, I think we started. And, you know, I used to send things out to get published anthologies myself as a writer. And horror comedy is what I write. And it was always really hard for me to find anyone that wanted that. It either, you see these open calls and they'd be either horror only or, you know, I never really tried the comedy route, but most of the horror anthologies were just horror, you know, and this is kind of goofy, here's funny, and this doesn't fit. So it was really hard to place a lot of those things. So I just thought, well, you know, I always loved horror comedy. And so I kept thinking, well, if I could come up with a name, you know, maybe I could do this myself. And that part took forever. I had some really bad names at first. And finally, I came up with Jolly Horror.
Which is bang on, of course.
It just popped into my head one day. And I'm like, you know, that actually works. And I had to go and see if, you know, the domain was available. And, you know, and there's other jolly stuff too. Like there's some Jolly Fish Press. And I'm like, well, it's kind of close.
I haven't even heard of that.
You have to Google around and make sure that, you know, the stuff you want to use is available. So I started that, and then I just published most of the stuff that I had. I already had the rights back to, so I published the first anthology was my own, just to kind of get a feel for it, you know. And
that's Betwixt, right? Betwixt.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
I've enjoyed that. I have some new favorite characters from that. I love the zombie. The zombie story, I think, was my favorite out of all of them. Sort of
zombie. You know, it's funny thing about that story. That's actually George Bush, the president. But most people, at first, like people would tell me, well, you put too many clues in here. It's too obvious.
No, it's not.
But I think maybe because so much time has passed, you know, because that was what, 12, how long ago was he president? 12 years ago, 2008, 2007, that the people just don't think about it anymore. So it's funny, but you'll hear him like he remembers being living in a big white house. And, you know, he remembered kissing a lot of babies and men in suits followed it. Like there's all kinds of clues in there to who he is.
Should I didn't clue into the president, but then again, I'm Canadian as well. Right.
So right. Yeah. But no, I mean, people that, you know, U.S. citizens don't get it either.
There you go. It's a good story, even without the metaphor. So
yeah, thank you.
And then from there, we just
opened it up, had, you know, and I worked with Lori Titus at first and now Autumn Miller as well. Just thinking of themes. Once I kind of had carved out the route with my own book, it was pretty easy just to kind of follow the same pattern, you know, for the other ones, just new covers, coming up with themes. And that's always problematic too, to what's going to be an appealing theme, you know, and I think we've been hit or miss on some of it.
So which ones have been the most successful? What sort of success have you had?
Accursed has probably been the most successful. That's far outperformed like any of the other titles. I don't know why.
Oh, it's obviously because my story was in it. No, just kidding. I loved Accursed. There were some very strong stories in there.
Well, the funny thing about Accursed was that I think I left off the word comedy on that because you usually put like a horror comedy anthology. We started to realize like we aren't really getting many submissions that are funny. And so rather than like keep the darn thing open for half a year, I was like, well, we're going to have to take some of these harder ones, you know?
Right.
And so I actually purposely left off, I think it just says a cursed horror anthology. Because people all send their stories in and it's like, this is really funny. And, you know, of course it's like, you know, when you drop a joke in a room and the joke falls flat, you know, you don't really know that it's funny. It's not funny. You know, I'm reading it like, where's the funny in this? I guess it's just a subjective thing, you know? And, so not a lot of funnies coming in. So when we do find them, you know, we kind of jump on them.
Well, that's good. I mean, I didn't even know that I was a horror comedy writer until I started sending you stories. And actually, that's my natural inclination. But I didn't even know that that was a genre. But now
if I remember right, a while ago, but I don't think your were comedy elements in them. You sent in a few right before the
did.
Purple was inked, didn't you?
I did. Oh, did yeah. You're right. They maybe weren't quite as funny. But then now that I do start writing, I do find that seems to be where I can get more flow in what I enjoy writing. I guess as long as I don't deliberately try and be funny, because I don't think I'm naturally funny.
But I think there's a point where like it's the setup starts off and it's really serious, you know, and you're reading it and you're a couple paragraphs into it or maybe a little further in some cases. And then there's some line that kind of just startles you and into the comedy aspect of it. And you realize like where it's going. Like I remember in the inked one, it was where this, she was finally meets this guy and they're going up out on his bike and it turns out to be a Schwinn.
That's right. Cause she thought he was a,
she's thinking he's like Sons of Anarchy, like a big motorcycle guy. And his bike is and he's like, let me double you. You want me to double you? And that's, I just like, when I read that, I actually laughed out loud. I was like, okay, this is good. And, but we get a lot that's just flat and people, they don't even pay attention sometimes to the, that's what we're dealing with now is they just send stories and they see something open and they send it in. Like, you know, I guess it doesn't hurt and maybe there's a chance, but it just wastes everybody's time, you know?
I guess that's true. It's funny, you know, Mike, because you know, in my books, I interview all the editors and the publishers, and that's got to be the number one most important thing every single publisher says is make sure you read the guidelines and send something applicable because it is wasting your time. And, you know, the writers are sitting there hoping for an acceptance, and it's never going to come if they've sent their high fantasy story to a dark comedy publication or.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know how what's in the mind. I guess they just send it out and see an open call and shoot it. And you can tell you usually get them right away. You know, if you're open for like 60 days or 90 days, you'll get like a whole slew of them in the first week. It's like these were already stories that were written. You know, they're trying to shop them elsewhere. So the odds are then they may have some connection. Like, hey, I've got this story that fits perfectly. But the ones you get later are people that are really trying to nail the actual theme down. And those stories are written more precisely for the anthology.
So that's
you can sort of tell. So even if I had a pre-made one already, I probably wouldn't submit it like in the first week. You know, I'd let a little time go by. You know, my suspicion was right off the rails once I get a story on day one.
That is actually a great hint I haven't heard before. So all writers out there, hold on to that story if it's pre-written. At least try and fool the editor in thinking you wrote it for the call. Well, that's good. So when you do get these stories in, what would be the difference between a good story that fits the outline and a story you'll actually buy?
And I was thinking about that because the hardest part is the good stories, you know, that, and we do get a lot of good stories. And a lot of times it can even go down to like 50-50, you know, I've got like, there's certain stories. I think what you're talking about is the ones I read and I'm like, okay, this is an immediate like accept, right? It has something about it. I like it, first of all, you know, it's a good read. It fits the theme. It has a bunch of elements that are really interesting to the reader. And I can just, I guess it's somewhat subjective because a lot of the stories that come in do fit the theme and they're good stories, but there's just a feel to it or a vibe that I just like, I really like this one, you know? And it might be subjective to the editors of the anthology. There's ones where, you know, because the way we work now is that I used to read everything, but since the last Coffin Blossoms and the new ones, I don't read all the stories that come in every day. So I have Autumn that does that. And she, you know, if there's certain things that are really bad about the story or it violates something, she goes ahead and rejects those right away. And then she'll mark things as like, hey, this is what I think is an accept. And this is what she might think is a maybe. And I'll likely read all of those. And those will be more than the book can hold, you know. So, you know, I'll take the ones I feel the best about. We're usually pretty close on what she thinks is an accept and what I do. And then when we get, so once those are sorted out, we'll have a room. I might have like, I want to hit say 90,000 words. I usually work off something like that. And that depending on the stories and how big they are, that could be 16 stories, like in our latest, or that could be 26 stories if you have smaller ones, word count wise, right? So it depends on the stories, how much room do I have left? If I have accepted everything that I love, 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 and I got 30,000 words left, then I start looking at the things that are just like a slight tier below what they're really good, but they just didn't wow me like the other ones. And I'm going to probably find the best ones out of those to fill out the remaining 30,000 words. I'm just saying what bubbles a good story to one I'll buy in that case. I don't know. It could be subjective. It could be just something, one little thing or another. It's hard to tell. Every story is different, you know?
Right. What I find very interesting is just how intensely you work with your writers. You see, I think that's, so you, as you know, you were one of the very first publishers, not the, but very close to one of the very first publishers who took my stories. You're definitely the first publisher to work with me who, you know, you're close, you're not quite there. If you just, you know, you don't understand what a cursed item is really. Like when you came back to me and worked with me, which was amazing for me because I was hitting my head against a wall, I sort of felt. How often do you work with writers, and then what triggers a writer you will work with and a writer that you might say, it's not going to get there?
Well, that all depends too. I mean, everything is a case, and I don't do that all the time. It's just too many. And it also is how people, you know, it's just manners and courtesy too, you know, how people approach. Some people aren't, they're rude. You know, like I remember, I sent a rejected message to one author, and he was like, well, this isn't good enough for me. I'm like, yeah, this isn't helping me to further my craft. And I was like, okay, well, but that's not my job. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Number one, it doesn't have anything to do with the theme of the book. And I'm just, you know, and some people are almost there. Like, hey, you know, I was really liking it. I think it might have been The Golden Falcon. I was really digging that story, but then the ending, kind of the first ending, was like,
it's terrible.
It just left me like unsatisfied, you know. And I think, well, you know, there's treasure here. It's just, you know, it needs a little adjustment, and it's worth, you know, pointing that out. Sometimes it's just not worth pointing it out, or maybe it's editing is the you know, that's the other thing I would strongly advise is to have, if you're not like pretty decent in terms of grammar, then get your stories edited. Because I just look at some of these things and I'm like, this is just, it's a good story, but to get this thing in the book shape, it's just going to take too much effort that I just don't want to do, you know, one of those stories that's like full of, you know, lots of markup, then you have to go back and forth and back and forth, and it's like, it's not my job to do that anymore. I used to feel like I really want the story regardless because it's such a good plot, but you know, it's full of passive voice, or it's got grammar issues or plot holes, and I won't do that anymore. So all these things kind of play a role, you know.
Right. Just so the listeners know, so Golden Falcon, which hopefully everybody just listened to, I originally killed Earl. Earl died in the Golden Falcon, and I got a note back. And this I also didn't know. I thought maybe my connection with you had helped get the story accepted, but no, Autumn picked it independent of knowing that you and I had worked together before.
Right.
But anyway, so they both got back. Autumn got back to me and said, the story's almost there, but we hate your ending. So then I feel like Earl has to live.
Right. Like those two were perfect for each other. So
they were. So I rewrote the ending to have a happier ending between the two redneck lovebirds. So I did appreciate that too, because it definitely made the story better. But I guess you have to be open, right? Like, I'm always open to working with an editor, because I know you will know more about it than I will at this point in my career. So I'm looking for guidance.
Well, that's key too, because some people aren't that way at all. And it's a ego thing, you know, this is how I think it should be. And it's like, okay, but you know, I'm trying to put a certain book out with a certain feel and a vibe, and it just doesn't fit, and you're not willing to change it. That's your right. But I don't, that probably means I'm not going to pick it up, you know?
Right. Makes sense. So what's next on the agenda for Jolly Horror? Because I've noticed you're expanding, right? Are you ready to talk about that yet?
It's not much going on with it, but yeah, we can talk about it. We just released our fifth anthology yesterday, and that is called For Never After. And that is basically tragic love stories that are in the environment of like a horror kind of environment. There's an interesting thing, because remember I talked before about how the stories, depending on their length, you could have like, say, 16 or 25 stories. Every one of these stories was long. And it's the first time this has happened. Almost every story was between 5 and 6K, which is our upper limit. And I thought, I think to myself, why? It's like, well, maybe to get like a tragic love environment, it takes a little bit of setup, you know, which takes words. You can't really build up a feeling kind of romantic relationship and drop that in 20,000 words, or I mean 2,000 words, you know, it's just a longer. But yeah, so it only came out to 16 stories because they were just all big.
I can't wait to read it. I've read all your anthologies in the past, so I can't wait to hit this one.
Oh, thank you. And then we have a call now for one we call Executive Dread, which is tales of horror in the workplace, you know, evil bosses and this kind of thing. And we did them all, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F. Every one of our releases starts with the letter of the alphabet. And I did some out of order. For whatever reason, but so like I know that if we do another one, it'll have to start with G.
Right. Okay. Absolutely.
Right. You gotta have The Curse, Betwixt, Coffin Blossoms, Don't Cry to Mama, Executive Dread, and For Never After. So that's our A, B, C, D, E, F.
Oh, very good.
But I think we're gonna take a break for a little while because I'm a little bit burned out on the horror stuff, and I do want to kind of do a little bit of mystery too. So we might move over there into mystery. I have a little website set up to start that. I got a new logo, Jolly Mystery, I guess. I don't know. But I'll put some thought behind that. And we're in the world of audiobooks now, too. So I've got two of them out there now, two in production, and another one I just did a contract for, the brand new one. So that's pretty fun.
So what sort of response have you had to those, the audio?
It's hard to tell. Point being is like none of them are new releases, you know? So like Don't Cry to Mama is the one that we're about to release, and that's our second book. It's already a couple years old. So a lot of the people that are already interested in it have already read it, you know? So are they going to go out and get the audiobook too? Probably not. But I want to have it there just to kind of fill it, you know, keep the three options available. So I don't really know. We're fairly new into the audiobook world.
I know a lot of people who will listen to an audiobook and they won't read a book. I have a few friends who are actually skewing that way.
Yeah, and I don't know if there's a difference between like a novel audiobook and an anthology, because you know,
I don't know either. That's interesting. I mean, does the
short? I mean, in terms of appeal, you know what I mean?
I actually love short stories in audio. Thinking about it, I've done all Stephen King's. I've done a bunch of his anthologies on Books on Tape in the car.
Yeah.
So who knows? Maybe it'll work even better. You know, like just drive to the grocery store and back, one story. I don't know.
I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
It could.
But yeah, so we're doing that. And that takes a bit to produce, you know.
So in the show notes, I'll put a link to your new website too. Folks, all of this will be in the show notes. Links to what John was talking about.
All right. Well, thank you.
It's good. So here's something that I'm actually struggling with right now. So you started out as a writer,
mm-hmm.
You start publishing your books, you start doing audiobooks, you start having new projects. Do you have any time to write yourself?
If I wanted to, I would have that time, but I just sort of don't want to anymore. I don't know why.
Well, interesting.
I hear, you know, all the drumbeat from other writers that say, you know, to you have to write every day. And I think there's some truth to that, but I just don't work that way. Like mechanically, I can't. I have to be in the mood to write, especially with the horror comedy. You know, you're not always funny. Bad mood, or I'm in a, you know, I'm cranky or whatever. I'm not going to put out good horror comedy. I have to be in the mood to do it. And just haven't been, so I don't do it. But you know, every once in a while, it strikes me like, okay, oh my god, I got an inspiration for a story, and I will sit down and you know, plot it out and then write the whole thing and be done with it. And then maybe not another one for a month or two later. I don't know.
Well, that's interesting. I kind of just run out of time. That if I'm doing X, I don't have time for Y. So I'm trying to find now time to get back to the writing because I did enjoy it. And then I seem to be happiest when writing, but you know, if you're making podcasts and you're publishing books and you're editing this,
yeah, I could take a huge break for my own writing between anthologies if I cared to. But in this case, I just kind of, we had the idea for the next one anyway, so let's just go for it. And you having Autumn to do the, you know, initial stuff helps me out a lot too. So I get time back from that as well. That was really hard to let go of. She'll tell you if you talk to her.
Jonathan, huh? Are you A-type?
Well, yeah, I was a little bit of a control freak in that. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of us are. It really took a lot for me to relinquish control of that.
Wow. This has been great to finally connect with you.
Same here.
And anybody who's out there looking to sub their stories, look up Executive Dread. When are you accepting stories until for that one?
We have out till the end of July. We'll see what we get. I don't think it's going that great so far, so in terms of acceptances. So sometimes I'll extend if we don't get enough rather than compromise.
Well, I will definitely put the link to that as well in the show notes. And thank you so much for your time today.
All right. Thank you.
Well, that ends our episode today. Thank you all for listening to the very end to our reading of The Golden Falcon and our interview with Jonathan Lambert. And it sounds like they need some more submissions for Executive Dread. So if you have a tale of workplace horror, the team at Jolly Horror are wonderful to work with. I can attest to that. I've had stories in two of their anthologies. Go to www.fonz.ca. You'll find a link there so you can figure out how to submit your story. I'm going to say another thanks to my wonderful reader, Christy Stewart. I honestly, her voice gives me chills. Until next time, everyone sleep well and tune in to the next episode of Read Me a Nightmare.